The following program is sponsored by Dynamic Money.
The Chris Burns Show, powered by Dynamic Money, creating personal financial plans built for life.
Hello, welcome to The Chris Burns Show. So good to have you here on a Sunday afternoon as we face the fastest 10% drop in market history last week. Moves us into correction territory. A lot of people feeling a lot of anxiety about the coronavirus. I want to dig into this, not as much about simply the virus or how it's spreading or what's going on there, even though I'm glad to talk about those things. I really want to filter it down to a very basic question. What should you do? Because you're hearing analysis right now from so many folks about why this is happening, what could happen, predicting what this might look like in the next few weeks. What should you do this week? When you wake up tomorrow, if the market is dropping, what should you do? If you have questions about this, the number is 404-872-0750. That's 1-800-972-8255. Would love to discuss with you again, practically speaking, as you sit right now, what should you be doing? Now, here's one thing I want to say in the midst of this. As you're pondering this question, that being nervous here is normal. And sometimes we forget this. I will never, ever forget after 9/11, when there was just grieving across the country, and there was pain, and there was this desire for a response. And there was, you know, 9/11 was this catastrophic event in all of our lives. We can remember seeing that happen. And I'll never forget the school that I went to. I was in college at that point. The school that I went to held a special chapel service. And in the midst of that service, it was a very optimistic, God is in control, everything's going to be okay. And an Old Testament professor at the school got up and just in front of the entire student body, in front of all the faculty, said, can we just take a moment to grieve? Can we just take a moment to grieve? And sometimes in the midst of really scary things, anxiety-producing things, tragic things, we jump right into predictions and immediate action plans and all these things that are so important. But I just want to acknowledge for a minute that a lot of you are feeling anxiety right now, and that's totally normal. And I know this because I've been getting calls from clients all week. I was actually in New York last week, so it was a crazy week to be there. I was already supposed to be there talking, doing financial discussions and talking about what was going on in markets. And in the midst of that, we saw this massive crash. So all week have been talking about these things and the theory, the philosophy of these things. That's great. That's important. But let's just pause for a second. If you're feeling anxiety, because I got call after call from clients who are saying, I just don't know what to do. I know I'm close to retirement. I know the market's dropping. I don't know if it's going to come back. This feels different to me. It's okay if you're feeling anxiety about this. That's normal. In fact, one of my favorite market analysts is a guy named Jason Zweig. He writes for the Wall Street Journal. He did an entire article a few years ago about his experience in 2008. One of the most brilliant investors living right now, where he published his journal that he kept all through 2008, 2009, and it showed him going from tons of optimism and going, hey, it's a market dip, we can buy on the dip, everything's going to be great, to this personal point of despair, going, I just don't know what to do. And the beauty of him being willing to publish that was that he was showing it doesn't matter how much head knowledge you have, there is an emotional dimension and reality to this that even the smartest investors have to grapple with. And so when we see the largest decline in the markets since 2008, the fastest move to correction that we've seen, and a 10% drop, and everything seems to be going the wrong direction, and there's conflicting messages, and even over the weekend, we're seeing more coronavirus cases, et cetera, and we're wondering how is this going to impact companies and supply lines? What's going to be the long-term impact to my 401k? And you're starting to wrestle with those things. I had one client tell me, I thought I was going to retire in 2 years. Now I'm worried it could be 5 or 6. This is just where our minds can easily go, understandably. And so let's just pause for a minute and say, that's normal if you're feeling those things. But what should you do? What can you do this week to get to a better place where you feel confident moving forward. Again, that number 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. So as we look at this drop, a few basic things to understand. Most economists, okay, and there's been a survey of economists from all different directions, but one of the best research done on this was by Oxford Economics, a well-known group, who came out and said, look, even in our worst-case scenarios, we see this being a short-term impact on the market. Even in a global pandemic scenario, that it would really impact the market just in 2020, that we wouldn't see dramatic change in 2021 going forward. And most economists I'm reading are saying the same thing. But the International Monetary Fund, the head of the IMF, came out and said something I think is really critical here. They said, look, we just don't have enough information right now. Like, we all want predictions because we want that movement towards control. We hate the feeling of sitting and not knowing what's going to happen. So we want this control that we can grab onto. But the reality is that we have to grapple with today on Sunday, as we don't know what next week's going to look like, is we really still don't fully understand the scope of this virus and the impact it's going to have on companies around the world. And by the way, I have seen a number of people post, both on my social media or on other folks, who are talking about the impact on markets and the economy. Well, you're talking about this, you don't even care about the actual people being hurt. Of course, the most important issue here is human lives being lost. Of course, the primary concern is, how do we stop this virus, because we want to stop the virus. And yet it's important for you to sit and be able to grapple with, what is it going to mean for me? And the reality is, most of us probably are not going to deal with the coronavirus itself. But all of us right now are dealing with the economic fallout of that. And Warren Buffett had a line that I think, you know, everybody quotes Warren Buffett all the time. He's a brilliant, brilliant investor. But I think this one line really speaks to me in the midst of this. He said this, look, quote, predicting rain doesn't count, but building the ark does. Okay, in other words, again, predicting rain doesn't count, but building the ark does. Here's the point. Just like the head of the IMF said, we do not have enough information, no matter who you're listening to, talking to, whether it's your next-door neighbor or it's Larry Kudlow coming out, the president's top economic advisor, saying, hey, everything's going to be fine. The actual reality is, we really don't know the full scope of this yet. Okay, we have to own that reality. And yet, any changes that we make, and this is counterintuitive, but I really want you to hear me on this. Any changes that you choose to make in the coming days should not be based on the coronavirus. It shouldn't be based on correlations to 2008 or the speed of the drop that's going on. Remember this for a moment. The market is currently up about 500% in this bull market, which, by the way, we're still in the bull market. A correction just means a 10% drop from your most recent high. An actual move to a bear market would be a 20% drop. Could that happen? Sure, it could happen. Will it happen? Nobody knows that. Nobody knows that. Okay, but in the midst of this right now, so many of us are trying to predict. If you need to make a change, it's not because of predictions of where this will go. It's not because of how bad it's been so far. You are still sitting very up from where you were a few years ago. The market's been killing it. Okay, any changes you need to make are based on actually getting off the cycle of reactivity. Because if you make a change, and I had people call me this week that said, I want to go fully to cash. And a lot of you listening right now go, that's a terrible idea. Some of you listening go, yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot. Right? There's folks across the board here. But when we see things that feel out of control and we go, I want to make a move, that makes total sense. And we can acknowledge why we feel that way. Okay, but if we stick with that, then we're living this cycle of reactivity, and this is what the cycle looks like, right? The market's dropping. I need to get out because I can't afford to have significant losses, and then I lock in losses because once I sell, I actually have lost money. Prior to selling, I haven't lost anything, right? It's just like asking about your home. If your home's value drops, have you actually lost money? Only if you sell it. Well, the same thing with stocks, right? So when you sell, you lock in those losses. And then here's the more important question. When do you get back in? When do you feel safe enough that you say, now is a time that I'm going to get back into this? So a lot of folks I talk with about 2008, If you can remember back to the crisis in 2008, so many people expressed regret to me and say, well, I sold early, I got out, or I sold, you know, midway through the drop, I locked in those losses, but then I didn't get back in. I waited far too long to get back in. Why? Because they couldn't predict if it was actually the market recovering or just a quick recovery until there was another drop. And so that lack of understanding and the fear and the gamble made people stay out. And in staying out, they locked in those losses and missed out on the gains they should have had. That doesn't mean you shouldn't make a change. It means the reason for your change should not be simply a reaction to what's going on. The reason for the change is that this week, regardless of what happens next week or next month or how long this extends, is a wake-up call. It's a reminder. So don't waste it. If you're feeling anxiety, if you have the urge to go to cash, this is a reminder that these kind of events in the market are not abnormal. They are bound to happen. And so why are we acting surprised by them? I've read articles where people are literally saying, we just didn't expect this. Experts, quote unquote, are saying, we didn't see this one coming. Friends, we never see it coming. It's like someone moving to the beach, though, and then having a hurricane come along and wreck their property and going, holy cow, I never expected that could happen. Being in the market means this will happen. The question is, what do you do specifically about that? The first thing is expect it, and the second is plan for it. And we'll dig into how to do that in just a moment.
Can't get enough of Chris? Follow him on Twitter at CW Burns for more.
So it's the fastest 10% drop we've seen in the history of the market. A lot of people feeling a lot of anxiety here or just not knowing what to do. If you are sitting going right now, what do I do with my portfolio? How do I handle this walking into the week? The number is 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Would love to get practical with you as we look at this. Here is the thing. So many of us right now are sitting and making reactive decisions, okay? And it looks very similar to being healthy, but there's a massive difference. In fact, they're opposites. Let me explain that for a second. If you are making changes or considering making changes or have already made changes to your portfolio based on what's going on with the coronavirus specifically, and if that wasn't happening, you wouldn't be making changes. This is reactivity. It's reactivity. And the problem with that is it never ends. It becomes a treadmill that you are stuck on because you're making a change to get out of the market. And then when things feel a little bit better and you seem like, well, you know, I'm going to go back into the market, and that will lead you down a bad path. What do you do on the opposite end of that? There is a different way, my friends. There's a better way. And that is this. It's not don't make any changes. It's make the same change that you should make if the market's up 10% last week. If everything was going fantastic and the world was rosy and wonderful and the stock market was killing it, I would give you the exact same advice. And that's this. Does your future, the retirement you desire, does the way you're invested line up with taking you to that place? In other words, are you living with a risk that you can manage and keep and hold on to long term, whether the market's up 10% or down 10%? Because if right now you're sitting going, I need to make a change because I'm too aggressive, that's a change you should already make when the market's up. Because when you live that way, suddenly the market's up, you feel okay because you're not worried about a drop. The market's down, you know you can handle the drop. Suddenly you are no longer on the treadmill of just shifting back and forth, which is the fastest way to tank your 401k. Speaking of 401ks, Carl is on the line. Carl, thanks for calling the Chris Burns Show. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, Carl, I got a little over a minute. What's your question?
My 401k, how would this coronavirus thing affect my 401k?
Well, that's a great question. The way it affects your 401k is entirely based on the way that you're invested right now. So I would encourage everyone to sit right now, look at their investments and say, am I taking a risk that I can stick with if we have a recession and that I can still be okay with when things are good? Because so many of us, the way that we handle this is we say, look, I'm going to get way more aggressive when the market's up. We were up 30% this last year, so I should be super aggressive. But if the market's dropping, then we go, oh, I got to get out, right? And that kills our long-term investment returns. So what you need to do is look at how much risk are you taking. You can look at the amount of stocks you have. And then again, not based on the coronavirus, but based on your proximity to retirement, what should you be doing? I want to dig a little bit deeper into this, and we have other folks sitting on the line. So we're going to come in a minute, Jim, if you're able to hold on. We'll come to Jim on the phones after the break. But the key here, again, is making sure that your risk lines up with retirement, not what's going on in today's headlines.
Want to know more about Chris Burns and Dynamic Money? Follow Dynamic Money on Facebook. Just search Dynamic Money.
Imagine what it would feel like if you had a week like we just experienced, a week where the market is tanking and your response was a level of peace. What would that be like if you're not experiencing that? The only way to get there might require a change, but it's not a change because you want to make a short-term play for protection. It's a change to get you to a place of risk that you know if the market's going up, you're okay, but if it drops based on your proximity to retirement, so you're 55 plus right now, you don't have the ability to take the same level of risk you did in your 20s, that your risk is at a place where you can stick with it if the market drops. And when you see it happening, you don't feel that anxiety because you know you already prepared for it. What would that be like? If you want to know, you have specific questions, you can call in the number again, 404-872-0750. That's 1-800-WSB-TALK. Jim, thanks so much for calling. How can I help you, sir?
Hey, Chris. Thanks for getting me on. I do have a question. I am retired, semi-retired. I'm a home inspector. And I have never invested in the market at all. I was never around anybody who ever did.
Okay.
So I've just been watching this over the past week, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, I need to do something here. And I don't have a boatload of money, but certainly maybe about $1,000 to $1,500
sure.
to invest. And I'm not quite sure which direction to go in this.
Yeah, so I'm going to give you the same exact advice I just said, whether you're just starting out as an investor or you've been someone in the market for a long time. Now, the uniqueness, Jim, is you can get into this dangerous place where you go, well, I want to invest on the dip, but is it really the bottom yet? Like if you'd invested right. earlier this week, right, you might have said, yep. I feel good about that. And then we have two more days of significant losses, and now you're kicking yourself and you're feeling anxiety. And it's like, oh, why didn't I wait an extra few days? Do you have that kind of anxiety as you think about this?
Exactly.
Sure.
You nailed it.
I think most people feel that right now. And here's the answer for that. The answer is, look, invest that money at a risk level that you know if the market keeps going down, you feel good about it. Here's why. Because we can look back historically. 2008 was a crazy market event. Percentage-wise, it was a less than 1% statistical chance for that kind of a drop. It's not a normal thing. When people sit and talk about it's going to be 2008 all over again, that's not statistically a reality. It could happen in theory. It's probably not going to. Okay, we went into correction territory 2 years ago. You might have forgotten this. This is not abnormal. And even if we did have a 2008-type drop, as long as your risk has been adjusted so you know that it's not going to wreck your portfolio. So in other words, if you're sitting on 96% equities right now, like one client I worked with who is in his late 60s, about to retire with 96% equities, that is a place where we should be concerned. Because then we'll see a significant loss if there's a recession or a significant loss if we move into a bear market and maybe not the time to recover from it. But if you move to a moderate allocation, maybe something more like 50 or 60% in equities, then you're okay when it drops as long as, here's the key, you have a disciplined plan for rebalancing. And what is rebalancing? It simply means this. It automates that practice that you hear about so often, but that Jim just mentioned brings so much anxiety. When do you buy and when do you sell? Okay, so let's just presume for a minute, just to make sense of this. You have 50% of your money in stocks, 50% in bonds, okay, just because it's easy math, all right? And the market starts to drop like it did last week, where we see a 10% drop or so in your stocks. What does that mean? It means a higher percentage of your portfolio is now in those safe fixed instruments. Not because you did anything, but because the equity piece dropped. But if you have a disciplined rebalancing plan, we rebalance our clients every single quarter, then that means that if it's gotten out of whack, or maybe the equities have dropped, but there's more fixed stuff, then we're going to bring it back to 50-50. How do we do that? We take some of the stuff that's safe, that's the bond piece, we buy more of the equities that are dropping, and that brings us back to the right percentage. Now, some of you hear that, and you go, I want nothing to do with that. Wait a minute. You're telling me that you're going to take the one thing that's not dropping and use it to buy what is dropping? Well, yeah, that's the whole concept of buying low and selling high. And we've all heard that forever, but here's the problem with good, sound investing. A, most of the time, it's not exciting and it's not sexy. It's not, I'm going to pick a stock and it's going to blow up and be the lottery for me. That's the first problem. The second problem is that actually doing it right, when this kind of thing happens and inside of you what you feel like is, I want to run to safety, but wise fundamentals is going, you know what? Actually, what I need to do is take some of the fixed, boring stuff I have and buy more of the thing that's dropping, even though it goes against everything I feel right now. That is how you have incredible growth and stability long term. And it keeps your risk in check. And the best way to do that is to take it out of your hands. Just like Jim was just saying, that, oh my word, I don't know if it's the bottom yet. Do I buy now? Do I buy later? Do I wait a few weeks? And it's going to be the same thing on the flip side. If he bought now, when things start to come up again, he's going, oh, what do I do now? Is it going to really go up? Is it not going to go up? When do I get back in if I'm getting out? All these questions constantly play in our minds. The best way to handle that is to automate it. Just like you automate your savings. Just like you say, you know what? I'm going to have this much money go into my 401k. This much is going to go into my emergency fund. Whatever savings you have, when you automate it and you're not seeing that money move, suddenly you feel you become consistent in it, right? Because it's not based on how you feel that day. It's not subjective. It's just consistent. The same needs to be true for how we buy and sell, but we can only get there if we start with the right risk level. So the change you might need to make today or tomorrow when you go in and look at your 401k is maybe you do need to become more conservative if you're somebody who's close to retirement, who's sitting on a whole lot of equities, but again, not because of the specific situation this week, which could be anything next week, could change dramatically. It's the same advice I'd give you if the market was up 10% last week. It's so that you can stick with that risk level and get off of this reactive cycle. So if you're not there, I encourage you, figure out what is the level of risk you can stick with that won't wreck your portfolio, and then live in that place. Amazing peace can follow that. All right, now, if you have a question about your specific risk right now or how you're handling this, again, the number is 404-872-0750. Phone lines are open, but I want to talk about one other thing that was really on my mind. So last week when I was in New York, I had the chance to be on Fox and Friends, and what they wanted to talk about specifically was a new study that came out, which says that millennials only scored about a 16% level of 16% of millennials scored a passing grade, quote unquote, basically, on a financial literacy test. It was the Yahoo Finance article. They asked three basic questions about finance. Only 16% of millennials could answer all three questions. Now, in fairness, among all groups that were looked at, even boomers, even folks retiring, still were only scoring about 50%. So no age group scored over 50%. So we're not bashing millennials. Some people come out to me and say, hey, look, you're just bashing millennials. You're saying they're dumb. No, they're not dumb. I know some brilliant millennials. That's great. But it is concerning that only 16% of people, in this case, they were saying 18 to 38-year-olds, knew the answer to these three basic questions about finance. And it goes to something we talked about a few weeks ago, which is how much do we understand personal finance? How much are we training young people to know the basics of finance? Because right now we're seeing Bernie poll the highest among young people. So Bernie Sanders with a Democratic socialist agenda, I would say primarily a socialist agenda, right, saying that everything is going to be free, is polling very high among younger people. Why is that? Now, part of that might just be, hey, look, it's because The reality is young people, we get excited about revolution and change and changing the system. That's always been the case historically. So they're excited about what Bernie is saying. But I think it goes deeper than that into a basic misunderstanding, not because they're stupid, because we haven't talked or taught this. A basic misunderstanding of how this actually happens. So it's fine for Bernie to get up and say, hey, look, we're going to provide free childcare, free healthcare. We're going to, we're going to wipe out your student debt entirely and promise free. And by the way, the only way we're going to pay for it is through wealthy folks paying for it. But The Atlantic just came out with an article that says, look, that's not the case. And this is in The Atlantic. This is quoting liberal economists who say to do what Bernie wants to do would cost $60 trillion. It would double the size of our government. Literally, it'd be double the spending percentage-wise that FDR did on the New Deal. We've never seen anything like it. And even economists that say they support Bernie and are sympathetic to him say there's no way that the wealthy can just pay for that. This would have to be a tax on everyone, or would have to mean even more spending, deficit spending. And we're already sitting on the largest amount of deficit spending ever. And I wonder how much that trickles down to why do young people feel so excited about Bernie? How much is there a misunderstanding of the history of this and how this would get paid for? This is not just something that's, again, going to be the wealthiest folks contribute and everything else comes free to all of us. It would have to be on everybody. And the question here is, we keep leveling the charge, or Bernie certainly does it, Mike Bloomberg saying, you're trying to buy the election. But my question is, how much are we trying to buy the election when we promise free to young people and to everyone when we can't actually follow through on that? And some of you are thinking right now, well, that's just what politicians do. And you're right. We can go back and look historically and say, yeah, politicians from election after election have had this issue where they've gone, well, I'm going to promise all this stuff and then it doesn't fall through. But in this specific case, even as Bernie gets questions of how are you going to pay for it, he's not willing to go into that other than just saying it's going to be the wealthy. And I think a lot of people will be shocked when they realize if any of this could happen, it's on all of us. Which goes back to how much are we dealing with this issue specifically because we haven't done a good job as a culture training our young people in basic finance. And that's no offense to Bernie supporters that are brilliant college professors that know finance, et cetera. Of course, there are folks that believe in socialism in our country and they just disagree with me. And that's fine. But a lot of the people that are out there excited about Bernie are not college professors with PhDs in economics that are sitting here going, well, I believe in it anyway, but here's why. They're people going, wow, everything's free. And it's going to be a massive culture shock to realize that's not quite how this works. I encourage anybody to go back to this article in The Atlantic. It's called The $60 Trillion Man, where it actually talks about these basic fundamental questions that Bernie is raising. Because if you have a young person in your life, a child, a grandchild, that is saying, I'm a huge supporter of this, this just goes to the facts. It goes to the actual numbers. And again, like we talked about in the past, if we don't educate, if we don't bring this to our young people ourselves, then they're going to buy into this message that, hey, it's just going to be free. It's going to be fine. And where that takes us 20 years from now is a terrifying thought.
Want to know more about Chris Burns and Dynamic Money? Check out dynamicmoney.com.
Well, it's been a crazy week in the markets and a lot of folks with questions. We're going to go back to the phones to Rusty in Marietta. Rusty, how can I help you?
Hey, Chris, I like what you were saying about education. It made me think of my dad when he taught me in the 60s that it's better to save what is left after spending than to spend what is left after saving. Mm. And we do need to educate the kids more. Hey, the question I had was, I was looking at my whole portfolio, and I've mainly got 401ks and IRAs.
Okay.
And I looked back about June of last year when the market, the big market, the one that's in the 20,000s,
sure,
was at 25,500.
Okay.
And that's about what it was closed at on Friday.
Sure.
And I've got almost $60,000 more when the market was the same. Does that mean anything about the balance or what I need to do? I'm probably about 60-40 in stocks and bonds, but I'm 64 almost.
Sure, that's a great question. This goes back to the rebalancing question, and I so appreciate it, Rusty. I've got a minute, so I'm just going to let you listen for a moment on the line here. It goes back to the rebalancing question. So last year was such a good year in the market that we saw equities gain a ton of ground, and if you didn't rebalance the portfolio, then you're going to see more money, even if you're keeping – you didn't change your allocation on purpose – but because the market shot up, that 60% of equities actually went higher and became a bigger portion of your portfolio. So when we see the market go back to the same level, you actually have more money because your equity portion is higher, which is why it's so important to make sure you're rebalancing so that you're always buying low and selling high, but also so that you keep your risk in check. Because when the market drops, like we've seen just over the last few weeks, we want to know that. We know exactly how much risk we're taking. But when the market's shooting up like it has the last few years, it's easy to lose control of that if we don't regularly rebalance back to the same risk level. So great question. Thank you, Jim. And overall, thank you for everyone who called in. Listen, here is the point. No one knows what the market's going to be like next week. Nobody has any idea. But what you can do is take stock of your situation and say, how do I make sure I pick a risk I can stick with? If you want more information about this, just go to our podcast. You can search The Chris Burns Show on iTunes, listen to all sorts of good feedback about this. I'll also be doing an extra podcast beyond the show to talk more specifically, practically about this issue. And if you're not getting our daily updates, if you just go to dynamicmoney.com, every day we send out an email, and especially in the midst of something like this, just to give you thoughts on what's going on that day, practical tips. Friends, remember this: your life and your future are so much more than money.